questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. The last episode of the Illumify Game Changer podcast focused on the leader making a request of others to act in some way that helps ignite the vision of change. This episode flips the script and asks the leader to act in a way that most neglect to do. Please read the next Unify card, Jonathan.
What can you offer them, and by when? The mechanism of exchange is important. If you want them to help you ignite this meaningful change, what can you offer in return? So the t-shirts, finally. We've got
everybody.
Everybody gets a t-shirt. Everybody. All sizes.
All sizes, all shapes. And it's funny, I mean, you're being facetious, obviously, but when I would do events from a PR perspective and you'd give someone a free t-shirt with the name of the whatever on it, even the most affluent guests, even the most senior guests, were so thrilled with a free t-shirt. It strikes something in us. So yeah, you can do your t-shirts here, but what else?
No, it's a really important question. I mean, if you take a step back and what's the big picture here? So what's the big offer? I mean, what I'm trying to offer here is a really, really exciting piece of work together, a journey that will go on together for, you know, X days, months, years, centuries. That's at the heart of the offer.
And remember, we spoke some time ago about how this gives them an opportunity to do something
exactly
that matters to them.
Exactly.
Because it has to matter to them,
right?
Which you're going to amplify,
yeah,
in order for them to be willing to participate.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's exactly that. That's at the heart of it. And that's the sort of the overarching offer that we step into this together. And we do something really exciting together.
And you are creating a shared home, so stepping in together makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the overarching offer.
That's the overarching offer. And as you said there, it's within this offer, within the project, there is space for everybody to contribute in whatever that way they see fit, giving people the space to bring their gifts to the table and express themselves through the vision and through the job of bringing this to life and getting it on the road. So that's
being able to express themselves through the vision.
Mm.
That's no small thing, is
no,
it?
No. And again, it's a test of the vision where it should, if the vision is true to itself, it will allow that. Vision must allow that. It's this permanent test of the vision. If it doesn't allow people to do that, it's failing. It's failing if it doesn't. So that's these are the big offers.
To this idea of allowing them to express themselves through the vision, something's coming up for me, and we briefly touched on this yesterday around you are offering them your leadership. You are offering them to put yourself out there, to use your voice so they can support that, but they don't have to do that. And in a way, there's, I believe, some relief in that.
Mm-hmm.
You are coming to them and saying, I see you, I hear you, I feel you. And you're maybe putting words around things they felt, but they haven't necessarily been able to name or articulate. And in that being seen, in that being acknowledged, they can find some relief and they can, so you're offering them your leadership.
Yeah.
And it's huge. It's a huge weight to almost take off of the shoulders of people who have felt this inner turmoil or not sure how to solve it, what they can do about it. And you're coming along with an idea and a vision and a willingness to see it through. And that's a massive offer.
Yeah, that rings true. And I think if we bring that back to the question, what can you offer them and by when? Well, that starts from day zero, from the beginning. You're offering that.
Yeah, and they don't know it exists yet. It's a new offer.
No, exactly.
So the very fact that when you start to speak about it, you can present it as an opportunity, an offer that you're making to them.
Yeah.
And look at that first line of the prompt. So first of all, offer and offers are another speech act. Where we typically make requests all day long, we rarely make offers. And if you think, when was the last time someone made you an offer, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
This was an offer. The Illumify Game Changer to you was an offer. Yeah. But there are other ways that we hear offers, and I'll give you a typical bad example. When you are in a conversation with your tech provider, your mobile phone provider, and you've got an issue, or any other provider where you have an issue, and you call them up and they're, quote, customer service people, you know, ask you questions. And then at the end they say, is there anything else I can help you with? And generally they haven't helped you with the first thing you called about. So now they're offering, what else? Well, okay, you failed first. Why would I try again? But it's a pat offer. It's not a listen to the customer, identify the customer's concerns, and then make a bespoke offer that resolves those concerns or adds additional value, not even if there isn't a concern, if there's an interest that you know they have, offer that. So those are offers, and they're rarely made. So in your case, you've got the offer absolutely of this participating in, contributing to realizing this new possibility. Is there anything else you could offer them? And again, the expression. It's a stop. It's a break. It's a destabilization. Like we talked about Pearl Harbor, breaking the force that was binding. You now, wherever they are at individually, with view to what your vision will address, they don't know yet, they consciously are not aware yet of the possibility of resolving it. So your very mention of your vision is going to break that open and create an opening. Now, there could be a bit of, not a shock value, but now is there something else you can offer them? To even in the first stage of them absorbing, and you're giving them a request as well, what else could you offer to do, to be for them? And by when?
There's something perhaps around reassurance here. Over time, where this comes from day one, I think. I don't think it has a time limit or a deadline on it, but there has to be. I'm contrasting it again with the necessary uncertainties of a new business venture, where you're inviting people to take risk with you, and people want to take risk with you, whether that's investors,
and disrupt their own status quo
by
stepping forward.
I see something different here, where we will need energy. We are disrupting.
Yeah,
we are disrupting.
Yeah.
We need energy. But my message, what I'm giving to the collective at this stage, is reassurance.
Yeah.
That, look, we know why we're doing this. We know why this has to happen now. And we know what we have to do right now to get it off the ground in these early stages. And I am here for you to follow on from what Brittany said. I'm here to take the hits, look stupid, because to some people I will look stupid, to take the scorn, the rejection, whatever it is. I'll do that. You don't have to worry about that. But it's also the reassurance that runs through the project that is durable and will go through each of the phases, guiding, setting the pace, keeping the pace, the coordination. So whether that, as you described it, that the moment where the leader must become manager as well. So there's all of that. I'm asking myself if there doesn't need to be... Who can promise success? Who can promise progress by next Tuesday or next month? But what you can do is give people a sense of momentum. I think that's important. I think the leader has to do that, to give a sense of momentum. And perhaps particularly at the moments where you hit your first obstacles, first disappointments, first frustrations, first rejections, first accidents. I think in those moments the leader will have to offer reassurance and to keep momentum through that.
Okay. And does that start right from day one? What's the win on that?
I think that you have to give that sense from day one. I think, I'm not sure. Having said all of that, I do think that there needs to be, you know, to use the cliched language, maybe some first wins that the leader has to offer.
Yeah.
And perhaps you wouldn't phrase it in that way to the collective.
What do you mean by those wins? Interesting, we have the expression winds of change, don't we?
First win, W-I-N.
Oh, win.
Win.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
First wins. Early wins, okay. First wins, quick,
yeah,
quick wins.
Quick hits, so to speak, yeah.
I don't see it as that. I wouldn't phrase it in that way, but nonetheless, as part of the desire to keep momentum and energy,
I see,
and to maintain energy levels, I do think, you know, coming to the very practical question, what can I offer by when?
Yeah,
I think perhaps some clarity over phasing. You know, to say to the collective, we have a first phase.
Yeah.
We're not going to get everything done, but we need to get this done by then.
Yeah.
And so what I'm offering them there is my own commitment.
Thank you for getting there. Yeah.
My own commitment.
Yep, you absolutely are.
To get us
over
to
that first.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I commit that however hard it's going to be, we will get to this first hill.
Good,
yeah, we'll get
good.
To the top of this first hill.
Because you're going from zero momentum to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Can you think of one sentence that you could express that through? That commitment?
Mm-hmm.
And it's tied in with the reassurance.
Yeah. I promise to you that by the end of this month, we will have our first glimpse of what's possible.
Okay, I take issue with that.
Mm-hmm.
You are already, through your vision, the first glimpse of what's possible. Mm-hmm. Can you go a little beyond that? More than first glimpse. This is about you. You've put your stake in the ground, collectively even, but you first as the visionary, by saying to them, come, hear my idea, see, hear, listen to my vision. Now, over the next month, I promise you, if that first month, Jonathan, is to do all of this due diligence together, gathering of intelligence, testing, etc., getting their input. At the end of that month, what will you be in a position to do next? What do you see next? Because they're just getting a glimpse of your vision, and now you're going to start realizing it, putting it, creating it, putting it into reality, doing it, actioning it, transforming it from idea and ideation into function.
I can imagine describing to them what the first staging post base camp would look like, what it would feel like.
So base camp versus where you're starting with them.
Yeah.
So you will reach base camp. I have a concept or a conception of base camp. What does it mean to you? Because that might be exactly the right term, but you have to share a background of understanding on what that is.
It's the idea that you're climbing a mountain and at some point you have to take a rest, but you have achieved something. So you will be able to look back on the progress you've made. You will have reached that first peak, which is perhaps only a quarter of the way up the whole mountain.
Yeah.
So it may be base camp one of four, maybe base camp one of 10, if it's a much higher mountain.
But it's more tangible, more concrete than saying glimpse.
Yeah.
You'll reach a place.
Yeah. Where there will be a first sense of progress. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, when you think about it, because we've spoken about you and your perspective being unique, so now you're saying we'll reach base camp, and from base camp, your perspective and theirs will be different than it would be at the base of the mountain, having already climbed up to whatever height, gone whatever distance. Each of them and you, you'll reach a new momentum, really. But there's another word in there. You'll reach a new level, so to speak.
Yes.
So base camp.
Yes. And I would perhaps want to find a way of saying to them within that idea of progress, a first sense of progress, achievement, that they would also, you know, I would promise to them that they would, I would want to promise them that they have a clear sense of their own place within this. This is not about assigning roles, certainly not about hierarchy, and to some degree the question of belonging is coming organically from the whole enterprise.
Oh, how beautiful is that? Yeah.
And that's that's partly in response to the freedom that they have to express themselves. So, but I feel the need to say something to them about where they will be and fit and feel within the enterprise at at Base Camp 1.
Yeah. Base Camp 1. Mm. See how you can even enumerate them so they know there's a sequence coming. And when they can track that to that continuum of change that required to fulfill, to achieving it, that in itself starts to manage expectations and unify around that. And it gives you permission to, through a declaration, capture the next base camp, capture the first one. Mm. Capture the next one once you've reached the first one. Don't take them, remember, don't show them everything. Don't overwhelm them.
No.
But also to celebrate each time you reach a base camp, celebrate it.
Yes, I think that's important.
Really important. Because it's a milestone.
Yes.
En route to your vision.
Yeah.
You're setting the milestones.
Yes.
And it's too often that there's an achievement made and the focus is on the next achievement without stopping to recognize, especially when it's a collective achievement.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's very, very, very important. Very important. In our personal lives as well.
Now, there's also an opportunity here. My son and daughter-in-law just scaled a mountain in Malaysia, and knowing my son, Alex, he decided to do it expeditiously. So they rose at, 2 in the morning. They did the whole hike up, reached the summit, and then where most people would do that in 2 days, they turned around and did the return, the descent, the same day. And they're both uber fit, and he said it almost killed them. So in your setting, the milestones, the base camps, the interval, setting the pace, and back to conditions of satisfaction, there are going to be times when you have to renegotiate. We'll get to the next base camp by X. And then as X approaches and it looks like there are other factors at play. It may take a little longer. It's your job to ensure that they're always clear on both the parameters, the milestones themselves, and the timelines on them to keep moving. And you know this from your work, don't you, Jonathan? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying this just for your benefit, but it is important. Because if there's a perceived lag or regression, when you are leading a collective that is comprised of those choosing to be part of the collective, then you have to ensure that the perception doesn't fester, that you've paused or relaxed or released your expectations of what's next. Because it'll give them pause as well. And when something means so much to you, it has to be compelling every step of the way to you and them.
May I ask a clarifying question to you, Marianne? When you brought up the idea of the commitment, I interpreted it as a personal commitment expressed to them to reassure them.
Yeah.
And now I'm seeing through the context of the conversation, it's more a strategic commitment, perhaps, or both.
So the idea of commitment, so if you imagine that you're hearing Jonathan's vision, it's a big idea, really big idea. And anyone who knows Jonathan already knows his great ideas, his great intellect, right? And he's also, and I say this with love, Jonathan, an idealist to a degree. So, because he doesn't settle for less. And so they would hear him express his vision very passionately. They will be moved by that vision. But at some level, they have to know right out of the gate that it's not just an idea he's conjured up in his head, but that he is devoted to realizing, dedicated to taking the action, leading the initiative until it is realized. Because otherwise, it's a great idea and fascinating conversation. And they've had many with him. So the commitment he's making, we spoke about credible commitment. And that is where credible commitment is not just the words. It is also invoking the actions. It's the words and actions, both saying them and doing them.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Great question. Thank you.
I'm seeing, listening to both of you there, that there are three or four fundamental things that seem to be at play here. One is the starting point of my own commitment. So I make that offer from day one, and it has no deadline. It's a permanent offer from the very beginning. So my commitment to them, I will do everything that I can do to fulfill this vision, but also that I will do everything together with you that we together can do.
Yeah. Now, imagine how they'd feel when they heard that. And back to reassurance.
Well, that's the next word on my list, that this is part of the reassurance that needs to run through all the phases of the journey, not least the difficult moments, the setbacks, the disappointments, the inevitable frustrations. There is in parallel to this another permanent offer, which is there from day one, and which also doesn't have a deadline, which is the opportunity, the offer to them, so that they can express themselves and contribute to the vision in their way. That is a permanent offer which is there. But then if we now start to turn to the first offers, which are time bound, and where we're setting the pace and making an offer that they need to see and feel by a certain moment, I think we're coming to this idea of, I have to offer them recognition of progress made individually and as the collective, where if we say we will reach base camp one, and when we get there we will pause and celebrate this first progress that we've made together. We will pause and celebrate this progress that we've made together.
Yeah, that's so important, Jonathan. And it is, well, we'll get to promises in a minute and the distinction, but And doesn't that, just using however many words that was, does that not start to capture that this is not time-bound in itself, that there is a magnitude to achieve, and that every step toward the realization will be acknowledged, recognized, and celebrated?
Yes, yeah.
Because you don't want their expectations to be, 3 months from now, it'll be done.
Yes, that's right. there's another useful or partly useful parallel with fiction and books, and actually the structure of books here. Readers like, I think a lot of readers, most readers like to have chapters.
Yes. Sometimes not too long a chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We take a certain degree of comfort
in completing a chapter.
In knowing that there is going to be a chapter, the beginning and an end. It's also at the more granular level, it's also punctuation.
Yes.
Long sentences can be beautiful. We get lost in a long sentence. Long sentences are there for a good reason. They're not only to demonstrate the magisterial brilliance of the author, but they have a real purpose as well.
Yeah.
Long sentences can be beautiful, but they can be a little bit terrifying as well. And there is nothing, put it this way, there is certainly nothing wrong with clear space on the page where we see an ending coming, where we see a pause. There's nothing wrong with that. And I think people, if people have the sense that this is going to be a long journey, but there will be moments to stop and pause, I think that responds to a human need.
Yes.
I mean, the most obvious one is rest. We do need to rest.
Restore. Yeah. Revitalize.
I can't quite put my finger on it, but I think it's more than that as well. I think as humans, we need a lot of, not all of us, but a lot of us, I think, feel the need to organize time. I think we're drawn to the idea of phases, mm-hmm. openings, beginnings, because that helps us to sense forward movement, progress, mm-hmm. momentum. Mm-hmm. If we don't have that punctuation, if things are a bit... The view of the wide open sea, endless.
Yes, expanse of water without any sighting of land.
Right. It's sure, you can say, wow, what a wonderful view of, and what a wonderful metaphor of freedom. Ah, nothing in our way. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. How long are we going to be able to swim in that? If it's not a boat we're in, if we're going to swim, okay. Yeah. And then we leave the shore.
The familiar.
I mean,
can't see the other side.
Yeah. So there are all sorts of natural fears, not just of sharks and drowning, but just that sort
and
of...
And fatigue.
Yes. And I think there's a certain anxiety that comes with just the open-endedness. Freedom isn't just a wide open space. There are other ways to... We do accept and... Paradoxically, we accept and we do need, want certain constraints on our freedom. We just need that as well. Mm-hmm. And I think...
Freedom within a framework.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
A bit of structure.
Yeah, well, you know, boundaries perceived or otherwise. It's also important you recognize that because you are going to, in disrupting the status quo, destabilizing... So you also have to give pause for them and perhaps the world to restabilize and to get their grounding again, metaphorically. And you remember, today we break with the past and stand on new ground. Interesting relating that to base camps, isn't it? But let them feel that ground before you ask them to scale higher or further together, because those force fields of resistance in us, around us, that are serving interests, that are keeping us where we are now as a society, as a world, as individuals, they push back. So just pace it. This is where the pacing is so important, Jonathan, and you will know. You will know. I'm also mindful now of what another advantage you have personally in your communications capability. Because as you're together striving to reach a base camp, there are going to be many constituents within that collective that will have, in subgroups, for example, concerns and interests that need to be addressed. One part of the collective may need more attention. Back to the symphony analogy, where when you're playing as an orchestra, sometimes the strings need to be heard more than the percussion instruments. And yes, you're all ultimately creating some harmony together. So those base camps are also an important marker for you to pause yourself and look at, okay, who's where? Where are they at? And who needs particular? Remember all of those things you've surfaced. Sometimes it's reassurance, yeah, conviction, myriad of things that you need to provide.
Yeah, that really rings true. I saw myself scribbling here this idea that by a certain time I would commit to give people a clear sense of where they belong in all of this. And that's not, it's not, you know, by this, we're in a real city, cops and robbers.
we hear sirens in the background.
This is not about, you know, by, it's not one of those very sort of corporate office conversations.
No.
Jeff, by, you know, I promise you by Christmas we'll have clarity on your role. And no, we're not there.
This and is, you'll have your bonus.
There you go. That's where we go. No, it's more, you know, I promise you, it's in a more general sense, I promise you that by Base Camp 1, we'll all have a clear sense, not just why we're here, but how we all fit in. And yes, that's not because I'm going to be giving you all on a piece of paper your job description and a job title. No. I'm giving you a promise that as we go along, we will keep looking at the progress that we make together, and recognizing that your symphony, Marianne's perfect analogy, we're working at different paces here. We're not all working at the same pace,
or in the same way.
Right. So again, we're back to this idea of a collective. It's not an army marching in perfect lockstep at the same pace. It's not that unity. If we're going back to unity, that's not the unity we're looking for here. There is a very healthy diversity in the gifts that people bring to the table.
Isn't it interesting? Belonging.
Yeah.
Diversity. You're already establishing the parameters of your vision.
Yes. Yes.
In the progress of realizing, the evolution of realizing it.
Yeah.
Jonathan, we have spoken at length, thankfully, about the importance of words in these conversations. And it's now struck me, in that initial revealing of your vision, whether you choose to use, as you call it, your short text or your long text, it may be critical that you add a separate reference to what, where you speak about what a collective is.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to do it now.
But you see how important that is.
But yes, absolutely.
What is that? And when you're inviting them in, even in that initial invitation, you're inviting them to be part of the collective. So what is the collective? And again, ties directly to your vision. And it's interesting. We have kind of two models here, existing models of organization. Morley would take issue with this because he's the organizational expert. So let me simplify it, though. In terms of change initiatives, I'll call it, like not protest movements, but I've referenced the Occupy Wall Street movement that boasted about not having a leader. We're all equal here. And what happened? Where is it today? What effect did it have? What impact? And then you've got a hierarchical organization where it's evident that there's someone at the very top and direct reports and on it goes, this cascading. So those are the primary models right now that most of us are familiar with. Would you agree? It just strikes me, in your collective, you have the opportunity for a new model that does not abdicate your role as leader, but in the width, the breadth of the collective, there is no hierarchy. It's like ideally the best of both worlds. Can you see that?
I can see very, very dangerous versions of that.
Oh, can you speak to that? Have you seen those in practice? Dangerous versions of it?
I immediately see the dangers. I'm not thinking of myself, obviously, but I see the dangers.
Oh, the authoritarianism.
Well, and the impossible relationship between the one and the many, which just has awful manifestations.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be interesting to see how Christians and the other major religions have wrestled with this question over the ages.
Age old, yeah.
And part of the answer is the hierarchy and structure of organization, church. So the church is the answer to that. And we know how that has been both good and bad.
Yeah. But imagine if you could set the pace and yet be one among them. There's some dynamic there. Yeah. I don't know that if it's ever been tried, and maybe that's naive of me, but in creating the new, there may be a new way to organize.
Yeah. Well, at the very least, we must explore that.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I remember something that was going right back to our early conversations in London. We were talking about Martin Luther King, and there was something very powerful about
the march and the
marching together with his people.
Yeah,
that
exactly
so much power in that,
and the visual of that still. You know, bridge.
The idea of marching together is just incredibly powerful.
But he was at the front of the pack.
Sure. Yeah.
But the pack, and so if you think of those in the collective and proliferating in numbers, increasing in numbers, you would be together harnessing all of the expertise, all of the courage, all of the will, all of the capability that together could realize your vision. And yet by itself, all of that would be the vision realized, wouldn't it? Shared home, etc. So there's something there, and you don't have to know what it looks like.
No.
And again, even the leadership and how your leadership is manifested could be different than what is now. So I'm just parking that thought as you talk about what it is you're offering them.
Yeah. The most important point I'm going to take from what you just said, Marianne, I think, is what you said about the need to explore it. We should always explore new models.
Yeah.
We should never accept the current
glossary. If what is current constrains in any way, again, it gets back to looking at what is and seeing if there is a new or a better way.
Yeah. No, I think that's
And there
important.
May not be, Jonathan.
No, maybe
but,
not.
Right?
But, yeah. But the vision is demanding. This is a demanding vision because
it
wants to test itself.
Yeah.
It wants to be true to itself.
Yeah.
It wants to reinvent and repair and restore old language while also creating the new.
Yeah.
And that we cannot avoid questions of the collective and how we organize it. And therefore, the vision should perhaps, it's almost a bit of homework for the vision. Vision, tell us what you think about, you know, what's, how do we organize this?
Yeah.
It's a good way of looking at it.
And it may not be evident day
no,
one.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Maybe you have to reach base camp 3.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I'm drawn again back to the sphere. So much of...
Ah, yes, the sphere.
So much of, I think, the exhaustion of our political models, if we just look at it in political terms, yeah, is that everything was vertical. So from communism to fascism and everything in between, that there is a verticality. Yeah. There is the citizen, the mass, the people looking up towards the leader, and, you know, to the communists who object to this, I'd say, well, look carefully at your politburos and, you know, extreme forms of vertical structure within communism. So, you know, give me a break. But that's not the fundamental point. The fundamental point is that there is a verticality between, it's fundamentally about the relationship between the state and the individual, between the king and the individual. I'm saying that as we listen to the soul.
We have the king. We're staying right across from the king's gardens, the new king of Denmark, the young king of Denmark, and his soldiers are marching, complete with, what do you call the fur hats? In blue, royal blue, navy blue uniforms.
In England, we call them busbies. The
busbies. I haven't heard
obviously
that
something
term.
Different here.
Okay.
Yeah.
And there we hear drumming and little flutes.
Yep.
It's quite endearing.
Yeah, it is.
Continue, please.
And I'm going to apologize to the communists now, because I've had a few seconds to gather my thoughts. No, there is horizontality, obviously, because it's the relationship between capital and labor. Okay, so that's horizontal. But the overriding framework is the state. I don't think Lenin and Stalin had any doubts about their position within a vertical framework. Religion or the king, it's vertical. There is something in this vision which is trying to get beyond that and transcend that.
Yeah.
And that is fundamentally, particularly in part two, where we talk about the diversity within us, within
different
each
paths.
Of us,
yeah,
and our need for each other, which is horizontal. Everything about that is it's about how we relate to each other. We're not dissolving the state. We're not saying there is no need. You know, this is not an anarchical vision, but it is about the relationships between us, and therefore it's horizontal. So this maybe, as we look for that, Marianne, of forms of organization, there's something in certainly in the horizontality, but also which speaks to the collective, but maybe something in the sphere as well.
Wonderful that you're starting to even see that or contemplate it. So let's go back to the question on the card, if we may.
So what can you offer them, and by when? And I think in summary, I'm going to come back to the principles of the overarching offer, of their opportunity,
to contribute, and to fulfill
exactly
what matters to them.
Exactly. My commitment to them that I will do whatever it takes, but together we will also do whatever
good
it takes.
Yeah.
My reassurance to them, and which must continue through the different phases, through the difficult moments, and where flowing from that there is recognition. So by when, we set a date, because we need momentum, we need to set the pace, we need to feel a sense of progress.
Yes.
Base camp 1, I offer to you that at base camp one, we will pause, look back on the progress we've made and celebrate what we've done together already.
Excellent. Thank you. I want to just pull one more thread that you
go for it.
Didn't, and it was that one you said, give them a real sense of how they belong, where they belong, how
yes.
they belong.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Yes.
So that is also your offer to them, that you would keep
yes.
them not apprised, but that's a nurturing, really, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's not a declaration, it's
no,
a nurturing.
It's nurturing, yeah.
So they
yeah.
feel they belong, yes. that back to that inclusiveness
yes.
of your vision
yes.
and of your collective.
Exactly. And it's also saying, this may feel, in the early phases, it may feel very fluid. There's going to be a lot of disruption.
Yeah.
We may
deliberate
all,
disruption.
Right. And yeah. we may all be looking to find our footing here
yes.
a little bit.
Yeah.
But I promise to you,
yeah.
by base camp one,
yeah.
that we will all have found our feet here.
And you'll already be standing on part of
the new ground.
Yeah, yeah. that metaphorical new ground.
Yeah. yeah.
Base camp one.
Yeah. yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
The idea that a leader should make an offer to those who can help ignite a meaningful change may seem at first like a nice but not necessary to do on the leader's long list. But it's not a gratuitous thing to do. It matters a lot. In part because, as we discussed, it signals that the leader is truly committed, credibly committed, to the cause of realizing the vision by doing something themselves, not just asking others to. It signals something else, too, that the leader cares, not just about the vision, but about those who will do the heavy lifting of the change. The ideal offer resolves something that those people need. It fills what is missing. In articulating an offer that satisfies their interests or concerns, the leader also conveys that they're being seen, recognized. And that is gold when it comes to building loyalty and trust, whether you have positional authority over them or not. Jonathan identified several offers in this conversation. One that fills their emotional need for reassurance amidst the unfamiliar, the unknown, and others that offer the opportunity to reach a milestone, a base camp, and pause, celebrate, and get a glimpse of what lies beyond. These are all offers worthy of those willing to help ignite meaningful change. But there's one that stands above all the rest, a higher level of offer, a promise. And Jonathan does that as well through his vision itself, a shared home on new ground in which everyone will belong and be their true selves. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. If listening to this Illumify Game Changer podcast is of value to you, please like it on this platform and share it with those who could ignite meaningful change. It's here, as am I, to be of service. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.